food prices have increased over 40%. Energy prices have increased over 20%. Wheat and gas prices have increased over 70%. What's going to be next? Do you see these trends reversing or even stabilizing? All fiat currencies have always failed and collapsed their economies on their way down. The Roman Empire, China, France, Argentina, Finland, Mexico, Russia, Zimbabwe all tried fiat currency and all collapsed into chaos. Meanwhile, the dollar has lost over 97% of its gold value since 1971, when an ounce of gold was valued at $35. If your assets are in paper, you are in danger. Protect your assets with gold and silver. Visit Discount Gold and Silver Trading at DGScoins.com. That's DGScoins.com or call 1-800-375-4188. That's 800-375-4188. Protect yourself and your family.
Ladies and gentlemen, I'm Melody Cedarstrom, and you're listening to Financial Survival. I'm here with my co-host, Alfred Adisk, to bring you our opinion and commentary on today's economic and political events for Monday, July 14th, 2014. Good afternoon, Al.
Hello, Melody.
Hey, it's Monday the 14th, and everyone is here, and crazy day in the markets. It's no worry. No worry. Everything is fine. The economy is improving. We should cheer. Yeah, we should cheer and be happy. Happy.
Don't worry. Be happy.
Don't worry. Be happy.
Yeah, that's it.
Well, let's go ahead and see what gold did today. They took it wasn't expected to this degree, but I could sort of see what happened. You had gold down $33 today at $13.07. You have silver down 54 cents at $21.01. Platinum was down $20 at $14.92, along with palladium down 4 at $8.73. USDX today is trading, still over 80.18. Crude oil was up a little bit at $101.11. But everybody was back from vacation, I believe. And certainly there wasn't any need for gold, and they certainly went into the paper market. So you had the Dow back over 17,000, a lot of upbeat market outlooks. I mean, what else are you going to say? We're heading into the third quarter. This is basically the true first day, because everyone is back from, I think it was a very heavy two-week vacation with the July 4th falling on a Friday. You had the Dow up 100.
I didn't get a two-week vacation. How come everybody else gets a two-week vacation, but I don't get a two-week vacation? How can you explain that? Is that part of the market fixing or something?
We can't talk about this on the radio. So, the Dow was up 111 points at 17,055, and the Nasdaq was up 25 at 4,440, and the S&P was up 10 at 1977. The 10-year is yielding 2.55%, up 0.03. And there has been a lot of upbeat. Of course, this is likely to be expected. There was pressure on the markets. And coming back after 2 weeks, everybody was back in form. Trading began, and of course, they were going to run it up to 17,000. And of course, that would put a little bit of pressure on gold. However, trading has been light for gold on Mondays, and I sort of see it perhaps turning around tomorrow. And you have to remember, gold buyers, It's weak across this country. Very little interest when you have the stock market up over 17,000. There's no fear in the markets. There's no need to buy gold. It's time to buy paper and take advantage of the Dow going to 20,000. Of course, this is what they're telling you. However, we have a lot of information, and that's based on more of the truth than anything else. So we see it differently. You did have European markets rebound after those jitters from the Portuguese bank had eased. That was one of the problems that we saw at the end of the week. And it was a reminder to investors of the financial market situations that and the debt crisis. You know, was this going to happen again? But it was a one-day wonder. And you also had Al, if I can find this gentleman's name here, Jamie Caruana. He's head of the Swiss-based financial, the BIS. He had said, and he has warned, that things are not as nice and good as what everyone, what the markets lead you to believe. The world economy is just as vulnerable to a financial crisis as it was in 2007. And we've probably been saying that since 2007. And he says, but the added danger is that debt ratios are now far higher. Yeah. Emerging markets have been drawn into the fire as well. And certainly, and the emerging markets will not have the ability to keep their system going like, you know, like the European markets and our markets. So certainly, they're a bigger danger and have the ability to, you know, feel the impact much greater. And perhaps that's where it will start. But he also said that the international system is in many ways more fragile than it was in the buildup to the crisis. Debt ratios in the developed economy 20 percentage points to 275% of GDP since then.
Well, the whole thing's, you know, I mean, they're trying to reassure everyone that everything is going wonderfully, but the truth of the matter is things are not going wonderfully, that's for sure. The talk about a recovery, we've yet to see one. Supposedly, the Great Recession ended a couple of years ago. I don't believe it, and a lot of other people agree. It was still lingering. We're just bouncing along the bottom. You know, and it's not a situation where, you know, despite the fact we belabor this point sometimes, we talk about it fairly frequently, given the government pumps a certain amount of sunshine, we try to put it in perspective. But it's really there for anybody who cares to look. This isn't hard to see. And the only thing that's really happening in the markets, what justifies the Dow Jones being over 17,000? We have relatively high unemployment. Businesses are not doing extraordinarily well. We have a lot of retail outlets that are closing their doors. What justifies the Dow Jones being over 17,000? And we'll talk about this as we get into the program. It's what some people have called a disconnect from reality. Mm-hmm. What's supporting this thing? And the answer is someone is manipulating this and making this. You know, the analogy I use, it's as if we have allowed the federal government and or the Federal Reserve to manage our energy supply in our homes. And they'll control the temperature in your home. And if it's in the wintertime and it seems like the house is it's down at 20 degrees, the Federal Reserve will assure us, no, it's a comfortable 68, 70 degrees. And just look at the thermometer. And it'll tell you that. Well, the reason it tells you that is because the Federal Reserve and or the federal government is holding a match under the bulb on the thermometer. And people are believing what they're being told rather than what they see and with their own eyes and what they feel. You can tell it's 20 degrees in the house, right? When the pipes start to crack and so on and the water starts gushing out one thing or another, it gives you a clue there's a problem here. And people are telling us, no, everything is fine. They're holding the match. under the thermometer and making it look warmer than it really is.
I saw Greg Hunter did a nice recap on the economy, and he was quoting a lot of economist John Williams. He does quite a lot of interviews with John Williams of Shadow Stats. And he, too, says, you know, forget about the so-called recovery. There is no recovery.
There hasn't
been a
recovery.
He says what's coming next is recession or worse. You know, he talks that we've never come out of the recession. I agree. I don't think we even came out of the one before that. If 9/11 hadn't happened and there wasn't a, you know, be American, be a patriot, and bye, 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 that ended us into the financial crisis, we wouldn't have come out of that recession either. So they come out of these recessions by rigging the markets and making people believe they're changing.
They come out of them for a while. But it's like subprime mortgages.
Well, it depends on how you report the numbers.
It depends on how you report the numbers. It depends on how you cook the books. It depends on things like subprime mortgages, where they were giving mortgages to people just walk in the door. They called them liar loans back 2005, 6, 7, in that vicinity, maybe a little before 2005. Just walk in the bank door and say, listen, I make 100 grand a year. And they say, great, how big a house do you want? And they don't check to see if you're really making the amount of money you claim or not. They didn't care because the government was buying the mortgages and the banks didn't have to take any risk. They didn't care. Tell us anything you want. We're selling it to government. They'll buy everything we come up with. The net result was a bunch of people who were unqualified for loans, received loans, they defaulted on loans. It ultimately triggered what came to be known as the Great Recession. But the reason they did the subprime mortgages in the first place is because the economy, they already saw the economy was faltering, and they had to stimulate it by getting people to borrow more money than they otherwise would or even could. Now, they've had trick after trick to postpone and avoid the problems that are inherent in this situation, and they've done you have to give them credit. They've done a fantastic job of holding, defying reality. That's what they've done. But increasingly, it looks like they're running out of road.
Unless they go into your pensions and your 401s and all your savings in order to use that in order to keep this going. But
we've got an article on that here from the New York Times. And it's the headline is This Roadwork Made Possible by Underfunding Pensions. There's the headline. The Federal Highway Trust Fund is expected to run out of money in August. So naturally, Congress is debating a temporary fix that involves letting corporations underfund their pension systems. All right? Of course, and the article continues, it says, of course, we could replenish the fund by raising federal gasoline taxes, but nobody wants to do that because raising gasoline taxes are so unpopular, they haven't done it since 1993. Tax on gas has actually fallen 39% over the last 21 years after you adjust for inflation. Right? And I assume that means after you adjust for official rates of inflation, and if you adjust for real rates of inflation, it would be more than 39% over the last 29 years, and probably a lot more. But in any case, instead, Congress has used a series of gimmicks and shifts to keep the fund solvent as highway construction costs have risen. The latest proposal, which passed the Republican-controlled House Ways and Means Committee on Thursday, works like this. If you change corporate pension funding rules to let companies set aside less money today to pay for future benefits, those companies will report higher taxable profits. See, instead of putting away money for pension funds for your employees, if the government changes the rules and you don't have to put as much money away for your employees' pension funds, then it'll show up as higher profits. And the higher profits will generate more tax revenue that will go to the government, and the government says we'll use that. See, the increased tax revenue in order to fund the Federal Highway Trust Fund. Well, that's what they're promising to do, but the point in all of this is they're going to rob the pensioners. Huh? If you're working for a corporation and maybe, I don't know how much money you've been putting away or they've been putting away into a retirement fund for you, well, then they won't have to put as much away. But who gets it? The corporation is essentially going to split it with the government as profits. They'll have a corporation that will have higher profits. The corporation says, yay! And the government says higher profits means higher taxes. And the government says, yay! And they can then supposedly fund the highway, the Federal Highway Trust Fund. But the people who have been promised a pension are virtually certain to be ripped off. They will not recover the money that this is that they are proposing. You know, this is a proposal at the moment. It hasn't been done yet. But it gives you an illustration of how government works and how they will try to take money out of the pensions by just changing the rules. That could raise taxes. Nobody likes a government that raises taxes. So instead, they change the rules about how much the corporations have to donate to pensions. And the result is higher profits for corporations, which means higher taxes for government. And yippee, government has more money.
That really is amazing. And their stock prices remain high. And yeah. I mean, it really is incredible. And but this, and you're right, Al, this is something that if it's talked about, if it's being discussed, and for some reason they really need to get this proposal, this Federal Highway Trust Fund, they really need to fund it. To me, that raises caution and concern because this is a real big push to get this done. I mean, they've been out there stomping the grounds to get money for this trust fund, to get these highways. So my question is not only this, are they going to go after the pensions and so forth? You know, what would it do? It would help create jobs. I mean, it's coming to an end, folks.
You know, it's also evidence of another point. Why is the government working so hard that they're willing to rip off somebody's pensions
to fund the highway
trust? With enough money to fund the highway. They don't want to raise taxes on gasoline. Right? Oh, my gosh.
They can't.
Well, regardless. Can't, whatever. They're not going to do that, so they're going to instead rob people. What does that mean? It means that the government, which used to be rolling in dollars, is no longer rolling in dollars. They've got to fight for every nickel they intend to spend. It suggests, it doesn't prove it, but it suggests that the government is growing increasingly desperate for sources of revenue, all of which is consistent with the idea that if government sees that the only place it can get money is out of pension funds, it's going to get money out of pension funds. If it sees the only place it can get money is out of bank accounts, it'll take money out of bank accounts. But it is desperate enough to take any money that it can find, which means the government is in big trouble. All right? It's not just a criticism of government morals or ethics. It's evidence that the government is in financial, is in a serious financial bind, all of which should give all of us cause to sit back and say, wait a second, if the government's in that much trouble, then how secure are the balance of our investments? How secure is this economy? If we're not generating, if they can't raise taxes, they don't want to raise taxes, they don't want to aggravate people any more than they already are. They can't raise taxes. They can't raise revenue. They've got to get revenue. What are they going to do? All of it points to, it's another evidence that we are living in a house of cards. House of cards has not collapsed. House of cards may not collapse for who knows how many years it might hold together. But everything you see, and there's just one instance after another, indicates, ta-da, this house just might fall in around our ears at any moment. It might be a couple of years from now. It might be this next quarter. Nobody knows. We're going to take a break for some commercial announcements. I'm Alfred Attisk here with Melody Cederstrom on Financial Survival. We will be back in a moment. Please stay tuned.
aspirin mistake. Aspirin was discovered by mistake during World War II and suppresses your immune system and prevents blood clotting. Don't expose your body to risk when you can use a natural inflammation and pain reliever called Extra Strength Pain Relief by Apothecary Herbs. Discover the power this formula has with Salicin to enter the system in 60 seconds to work hard and relieve pain for 12 hours. Whether it's arthritis, sports injury, or flu, you can relieve aches, pain, and swelling with our Extra Strength Pain Relief formula. Call Apothecary Herbs now, toll-free, 866-229-3663. That's 866-229-3663. International callers dial 704-875-8010 or order online at thepowerherbs.com.
Food prices have increased over 40%. Energy prices have increased over 20%. Wheat and gas prices have increased over 70%. What's going to be next? Do you see these trends reversing or even stabilizing? All fiat currencies have always failed and collapsed their economies on their way down. The Roman Empire, China, France, Argentina, Finland, Mexico, Russia, and Zimbabwe all tried fiat currency and all collapsed into chaos. Meanwhile, the dollar has lost over 97% of its gold value since 1971, when an ounce of gold was valued at $35. If your assets are in paper, you are in danger. Protect your assets with gold and silver. Visit Discount Gold and Silver Trading at DGScoins.com. That's DGScoins.com or call 1-800-375-4188. That's 800-375-4188. Protect yourself and your family.
American Voice Radio Network is heard on Galaxy 19 at 97 degrees west, transponder 23, frequency 12115, audio PID 2595. AVR is heard on the left side audio channel, and AVR 2 is heard on the right side audio channel. Remember, both AVR and AVR 2 are on Galaxy 19. Same network, double the choices.
Hi, folks. I'm Alfred Addis here on Financial Survival with Melody Cederstrom. The program is brought to you by Discount Gold and Silver at 1-800-375-4188 for all your gold and silver coin needs.
I'm sorry, Al. I didn't mean to. I'm just all excited today.
What are you excited about?
Gold dropped. It's a great buying opportunity, and people have really been taking advantage of it today. Good. And so it's certainly a great time. I mean, gold can go to 2,000, and it's still going to be a great buying opportunity at 2,000. But you can get a heck of a lot more now at today's prices, and it's difficult to time the market. Some folks get lucky. I can't tell you how many clients I said, well, I'm buying today, and gold will go down tomorrow. And they're almost always right when they say that. They got to change their thinking process around that when they buy today, it's going to go higher. And but certainly lots of folks have taken advantage of both the gold and silver prices. We're running the free Silver Eagle on all trades this month. And if you buy, you know, if you're looking to buy a large trade, no, you can't divvy it up into, you know, eight trades in one day, so you can get eight Silver Eagles. You know, good try there, folks. But I mean, we're fair and we're honest, and we certainly want everyone else to be that way too. And which you are, and I say that a little bit with a joke, but as a kid and so forth. But we do have the free Silver Eagle today with all purchases, and we've been doing this for several months now, and people are appreciative, and we are too. Visit our website at dgscoins.com, dgscoins.com. Make sure you sign up for our weekly newsletter, and 1-800-375-4188. And if you have any calls or comments that I should say, if you have any comments or questions for today's program, you can call us at 1-800-596-8191. That is not for gold. That is for questions. 800-596-8191. And we're going to continue along with the article, the recap from Greg Hunter, and some quotes by economist John Williams of Shadow Stats. But first, Al, we have Jim calling from West Virginia.
Well, Jim.
Hello. I just have two little short comments to make. It has been a while since you folks talked about the FDIC, and I don't remember numbers that go in one ear and out the other anymore, but if I remember correctly, they have less than one-fourth of a penny to cover every dollar in U.S. banks. Biggest scam, and I learned about this scam when I was a kid. Now, that's kind of like insuring a $100,000 house with an insurance company worth $250. So I've heard of, it's been a while since you mentioned this, and also, you keep talking about robbing the pension funds. I would say a bunch of them have already been robbed. The municipal bonds, which have been insured by AmBec, looked up. And I know the percent of West Virginia Declaration. Looked into the pension funds on the CAF, and I think I mentioned this to you folks before. I'm 90% sure I have. But I looked into that, and almost all of them are mortgage-backed securities, which might be worth 10, 20 cents on the dollar. I don't know. But I'd say right off the bat, there's a good chance pension funds have already been hit. So I'll kind of, you know, let you guys go with that. But incidentally, I love Greg Hunter's work. I love
inflation.
John Williams' work, too.
Mm-hmm. Hmm? All right, Jim. Thank you.
Thank you.
We're all being robbed. We're being robbed by inflation. Huh? And this particularly applies to people who are on a fixed income. If you're receiving Social Security and there's 7% inflation and you receive $1,000 a month from Social Security now, by this time next year, you're going to have $930 a month in purchasing power if inflation remains at 7%. The inflation is allowing government to pay its debt, and that includes debts to pensioners, that is to say people on Social Security. You're being robbed by inflation. Everyone says, oh, we are just barely at 2% inflation. No, you're probably up around 7%. According to John Williams, I just listened to one of his videos with Greg Hunter and myself earlier today, and he was saying it's 6%, 7% anyway, maybe more than that. We're being robbed. Why does that inflation happen? We have lost over 95% of the dollar's value in my lifetime. Over 95%. That's not an accident. That's a trend. That's an intent. Government is intentionally and constantly whittling away at the value of the dollar in order to reduce it. And when they do, who gets hurt? People on fixed incomes. People who have pensions that are denominated in a fixed number of dollars. Want another robbery? They're robbing pension funds already. Not a new thing. They've been doing it for most of your lifetime and mine in the form of inflation. So we can't sit back and say there's a new generation of congressmen who are crooks and the previous generations were good guys. No, they've been crooks all along, mostly. There may be a few exceptions, but they have betrayed the people with inflation all along. They have robbed the people. What has happened to our gold treasury, supposedly contained at Fort Knox and perhaps some at West Point and some in the New York Federal Reserve's vaults in New York City? How much gold does the United States still have? It hasn't been inventoried since 1953 or 54. You understand? It's something like 60 years since anyone's actually counted how many gold bars are still in the United States Treasury. There are a lot of people that believe that the gold is gone. The government has used it to suppress the price of gold in order to maintain the illusion that the fiat dollar has value that isn't in fact there. That's your gold, Mr. and Mrs. America. That's your gold that your government has secretly moved to foreign countries. So the lesson here is that it's not a surprise if government is secretly robbing us. They do it all the time. The only thing is, how much do they rob us at any given time? Because the American people will put up with it. 2%, 5%, 7% inflation, yeah, they'll put up with that. But at what point do we finally sit back and say, you know, the government's taking more from me. They're robbing me more than I can afford to be robbed. And if we hit that point, we reach that point, then we're going to see some sort of a dramatic confrontation, collapse. Hard to say what will happen, but there will be a moment of truth. But for now, just, you know, we're being robbed, yep. And you're guaranteed by the FDIC. Jim was talking about the FDIC, and these they are guaranteeing however much money you've squirreled away in your bank account. But I don't know the exact numbers. Jim's estimate was there was something like a quarter of a cent in the FDIC coffers for every dollar.
Mm-hmm. I've seen it.
That's in bank accounts right now, which means only a relatively few banks need to suffer a bank run and go broke to simply wipe out the FDIC. They're promising that your wealth is protected, but the truth of the matter is, in a widespread problem, there's no protection for your wealth, or at least not the wealth that you've got stored in your bank accounts. You are vulnerable. Are we going to see that kind of a problem in the bank system? I don't know. Some people talk about it. There's a certain amount of, you know, hyperbole, doom and gloom, blah, blah, blah. Maybe we'll see it, maybe we won't, but the fact is you are vulnerable if it does happen. If there is a national problem, you and I or anyone else who has a bank account, we are vulnerable on these situations. You know, one of the things Melody mentioned in the first segment of the program is that there are rising debt levels around the world. It's not just here in the United States. Other governments and nations are going deeper and deeper and deeper into debt. What does that suggest? It suggests that perhaps all of the governments of the world are simply desperate. That's one possibility. They have no way to try to get out of this, the current global problem, other than just printing more money, which is stupid, but regardless, it's like punching holes in the bottom of your boat to let the water out. You know, there's too much water in the boat, punch a hole in the bottom and it'll drain out. It's just idiotic, but they're doing it. Maybe that's all it is. It's perhaps desperation. It's perhaps evidence that they recognize there's going to be some sort of monetary correction where the currencies of the world are going to all of a sudden get together and say, look, today, I don't know, how many, we're going to reset the dollar, and instead of the dollar being worth, I don't know, 1.4 pounds, Melody, is that true?
Pardon?
What's the ratio of dollars to pounds, English pounds right now? Do you know offhand? Or even euros? Can you just give me a rough idea of any one of those?
Well, the euro is 136. I don't know.
All right. Instead of taking $1.36 to buy a euro, if I'm understanding correctly, it'll take $2.50 to buy a euro, which means the relative value of the dollar falls by half. All right? Now, when the dollar falls by half, one of the things that's going to happen is the actual size of the national debt will be reduced by half. Even though the government says it's $17 trillion, it will still be $17 trillion, but each of those dollars will only be worth 50 cents compared to what they're worth today in terms of purchasing power. It may be that the governments of the world are going deeper into debt because they understand there's going to be some sort of massive correction where all of a sudden everybody's going to have to agree that we're not going to honor the debts. We're just going to have to write them off. Maybe not all of them, but 50% of them, or 70%, or 80%, or even 90%. Who knows? But we're going to write it. We're going to have to write the debt off. And it's got to happen sooner or later because the debt, at least in this country, is too great to ever be repaid. It can't be repaid in full, not other than just 10%, 20%. You might be able to repay it, but that's as far as it goes. So it may be that the whole world at this top, at the government level, they're waiting for a reset where they can stiff everybody. And when they do, this isn't just a casual thing because it wipes out the value of U.S. Treasuries, for example. If the dollar is suddenly depreciated by 80%, it means that if you've got $100,000 in U.S. Treasuries, you had $100,000 today, to tomorrow, the next day after that, you have $20,000 in U.S. Treasuries in terms of purchasing power. If the dollar is depreciated by 80%, you got $20,000. You had $100,000, now you got $20,000. How do you like it? When they cancel the debt, they wipe out, they don't just wipe out the debt, they wipe out the creditors, which are, to a significant degree, you and me and the people who have pension funds. They've got U.S. Treasuries in their pension funds, supposedly secure and supposedly, you know, you can reliable and so on. There's good reason to believe that's not so. And I'm not telling you that you should, I'm not telling anyone that you should necessarily believe that opinion, but I'm telling you, you have to consider that opinion and you have to search out the evidence for yourself and you have to make a decision in your own mind where you either say, no, I think we can trust those treasuries, or you say, oh my gosh, I don't think we can. We got a caller. Go ahead.
Actually, we are telling them that they can't trust those treasuries because of what is happening. And when Jim mentioned about the pension plans, yeah, I mean, you have CalPERS. It's the state employee pensions in California. They're underfunded by 52%. You have your state pensions.
Yeah.
None of them. They're all underfunded. I saw numbers where back in 2009, you had the plans were underfunded to about $4.5 billion. Recent numbers, I've seen almost $1 trillion, 800 and, you know, some billion dollars that are underfunded pensions. And this is everywhere. Very few pensions are fully funded, probably the U.S. Post Office. And look what's happening to them, only because they're required to make those payments years in advance. And it's putting them out of business, because I figure there's somebody in the background, some private investor who wants to come in and scoop them up. Somebody's going to be making tons of money on the post office situation, because why else would they force them to pay their pension plan years in advance? It doesn't even make sense when
well,
you have all these.
Well, certain amount of sense, but they
not
are.
Not when you have every other pension plan in this country that is underfunded. So, no, it doesn't. The government's pension plans are not fully funded, so why would they force the post office to do it? The one company out of how many they're forcing them to. No, there's something that, you know, again, it's a situation where they're creating it for it to fail, kind of like GM. You know, hey, it was set up to fail. And, you know, when they went through the hard times, they did everything possible. They wanted it to fail. So they're doing the same thing with the post office. They want it to fail. So you have to ask why. Well, there's somebody in there that's going to be making a ton of money on it, or they have a plan on how they want to for it to proceed. But, yes, you have all these. You have Kentucky. They're underfunded. I mean, you could probably name any
Illinois.
Chicago,
I mean, if there's one place that's the pension
Chicago.
Funds have been robbed, go talk to the people in Illinois.
Exactly. So, yeah, it's a big, big problem. And if you think you're going to be walking away with all your money from your pensions, you're sadly mistaken. And, you know, we talk about they're going to do it to everybody. I think that they've been doing it, but they do it very quietly. They do it to a handful of people at any particular time, because what can a handful of people do? You know, they're pretty much stuck. They accept it, and they go on their lives. They get robbed and say, well, now it's just like the guy breaking in your house. You get robbed, you fix it, and you go on, and you replenish your funds. You get a lot of people that it's happening all at one time. They'll come in with a program and say, hey, we got a deal for you. We'll do this annuity. Give us all your money. You'll never have to worry about losing it again. And we'll pay you on a monthly basis, very similar to Social Security, but this will be a little bit different. It's not going to be called Social Security, but it will be a handout, and they will control your money.
And they'll be able to rob you by inflation.
And if you want that, if people want that, then continue investing in paper, and that's exactly what you're going to get.
Yep, I agree. We're also going to get some commercials. I'm Alfred Addis here with Melody Cederstrom on Financial Survival. We've got Joe from Arkansas holding on the line, and we'll get to him as soon as we get back from our commercials.
Mm-hmm. Countries have denied internet access for their people during civil strife. The FCC seized in-use commercial shortwave frequencies right after the September 11th attacks. No one communication system can be depended on to be there when you need information. You need choices. You need a KU band free-to-air satellite system from AVR. The AVR system includes a receiver, an LNB, and a 75-centimeter dish. All you need to get on your own is the coaxial cable. The system is delivered to your door for $149.99. That's right, delivered for $149.99. That's the shipping and the system, $149.99. Call 541-225-4659. That's 541-225-4659. Or visit AmericanVoiceRadio.com and click Satellite System.
Since the beginning of the United States, kings have sought it. Nations have fought for it. It has been traded, borrowed, purchased, and stolen. There is a reason for it. To secure the blessings of liberty to ourselves and our posterity, invest with the security of gold and silver. Call Discount Gold and Silver Trading at 1-800-375-4188. That's 1-800-375-4188. Listen to Financial Survival with your host, Melody Cedarstrom, on American Voice Radio Network and Shortwave Radio. Visit DiscountGoldAndSilverTrading.net or call 1-800-375-4188. That's 1-800-375-4188. For the very best in gold and silver trading, call toll-free 1-800-375-4188. That's 1-800-375-4188. Call now.
Hi, folks. I'm Alfred Addisk. You're on Financial Survival with Melody Cedarstrom, brought to you by Discount Gold and Silver, 1-800-375-4188. Joe's been waiting throughout most of the previous segment. He's on the line. Joe, are you there?
I'm here, Al.
What you got for us?
Yes, hello?
Yeah.
Hello? Am I in there?
Yes, you are.
Hello? Yeah, okay. Okay, I wanted to say about this about the government taking the pension funds that you were talking about, and that I think this has to be absolute proof positive that the people in government absolutely want to destroy the American economy and impoverish the people, because the answer to that problem is so simple, so clear, so blatantly obvious, you know, that they have to be deliberately ignoring it and to not be talking about it. And that's, you know, of course, if we would just go back to a policy of being self-sufficient as a country, if the government would just say, okay, 90% of all the stuff that is sold in this country has to be produced in this country. 90% of the food has to be produced in this country, 90% of the clothes, 90% of the cars, 90% of the cell phones, 90% of the computers, 90% of all the stuff that people commonly buy has to be produced in this country, then we would have so much earned money circulating in the economy. Of course, they might have to relax some regulations and lower some taxes so that people could get back into business, but they could do that too if they really want to save the economy of this country. If they would do that, if they would get back to that kind of a policy, then there would be so much earned money, the tax base would be so high that the government wouldn't have any of these problems. But instead, you know, and that's clear and obvious. I don't see why everybody doesn't see it right away. It's the clearest and obvious, you know, cause of the whole problem of the government lacking money, and I'm sure everybody sees it, but just for some reason, hardly anybody is talking. And the same thing with what you're talking about, all the countries all over the world being in debt, being in impossible debts, and of course the reason for that is they've all bought into the globalist paradigm that it's good to buy where the raw materials are the cheapest, produce where the wages are lowest, therefore shortchange the economy of as much earned money as possible, get the earned money circulating in the economy down as low as possible, so that to have anything of an economy going at all, you know, we have to borrow, run up excessive debts. So that's the solution to that problem, too. And it's so clear and so obvious, you know, and it must be everybody sees it if a fool like me can see
no,
it.
No, it's not that everybody sees it, Joe, and that's the problem.
But they're trying to destroy all the economics of the country and the world because they won't do it.
I agree that they want to destroy something. And one of the solutions you're talking about, we have to make a law that 90% of our computers, automobiles, refrigerators, whatever, are made in this country. Well, the way you get that done is you just reestablish our tariff barriers. The reason 90% aren't made in this country is because they have knocked the tariff barriers down to accommodate global free trade, and that's how they allow the production. They take the resources where the resources are cheapest, have them assembled, manufactured where the labor is cheapest, and sell it into those countries that still have the most money and can pay the highest prices. The reason they're able to do that is because they went for global free trade. They knocked down our tariff barriers, raised tariff barriers back up, and they have to build the computers here in this country. They have to build the cars in this country. They have to build whatever else that we're currently importing, generally speaking, has to be built in this country. Doesn't mean you can't import, but the premium you'll pay if you do import is so large, most people wouldn't do it. The point, then, is they're trying to take this country down in order to establish a new world order and or global free trade. And if they're going to do that, the multinational corporations will profit dramatically, and the American people will be impoverished. The American dream that each generation will live better than the previous generation, it will be over, ended. And most of you who are listening will see that your children live as if they were born into a third world country. That's where we're heading, unless people begin to understand the problem, stand up, and do something about it. Like, get your congressman and make him understand in no uncertain terms. You want a restoration of tariffs. You want to get out of global free trade. You want to manufacture in this country. You want jobs brought back with manufacturing brought back into this country, and we don't need any more illegal aliens. Thank you very much. What do you think, Joe?
And, yeah, I think you're exactly right, Al. I think you've got it analyzed just exactly right. You've got the right solution. And I think it would be also good, especially if people would remind their Republican senators and Republican congressmen that this country became prosperous and this country became the greatest manufacturing and industrial country in the world in the late 1800s and early 1900s. Precisely because the Republicans at that time were strong protectionists. They supported high tariffs on imports. Abraham Lincoln was a strong protectionist and supporter of tariffs, and he thought that tariffs were an extremely good way to fund the federal government. He said that way the federal government, the taxes to support the federal government would mostly be paid by people who weren't so patriotic and didn't want to support their fellow Americans. You know, they wanted to buy luxury imported items from overseas. And so it was those more unpatriotic people that would be paying most of the taxes to support the federal government through their tariffs. And it's because the Republicans, you know, have abandoned their traditional position on this. The Republicans have abandoned their traditional protectionism, and now all these Republican commentators on all these, you know, supporting so-called on the radio, they talk as if free trade has always been traditional position of America and of the Republicans, and that it's absolutely unthinkable, you know, to have tariffs again and to go back to protectionism. But that is exactly, but it is exactly protectionism and tariffs under the Republicans, you know, in the late 19th and early 20th century that made America wealthy and made the United States the greatest.
Is that the only example you can think of tariffs? Is that the only example of tariffs that you can think of that have helped?
Which one?
Cause a nation to rise significantly on an economic basis? You know, a lot of people in government say the tariff is an outmoded, it's an outmoded idea. It's something, yeah, it might have worked in the 17th, 18th centuries, but it's no longer fit for today. What about Japan?
Well,
what about Japan after World War II? Their nation and their economy had been destroyed. And yet in a just a few decades, they rose from that destruction to where they were for a while the second biggest economy in the world. They did that with high tariffs. It was almost impossible to sell foreign goods into Japan. And based on that, they had high employment, their technology grew dramatically, their corporations grew, and the tariffs are what made Japan the world's number two economy. And that happened in my lifetime. We're not talking about back in the 17th century or the 18th century, or the 19th century. We're talking about in my lifetime. Evidence that tariffs work to make a nation more prosperous.
Yeah, but look what they're doing now. I mean, they went into their recession and they haven't come out in 20 years.
Yeah,
now, you know, so no, they didn't play the global game. Now they are, because they were stuck and because everybody else was taking advantage and making, you know, being prosperous, you know. And again, it's governments that are prosperous. It's multinational corporations that are making all the billions and billions of dollars, and these individuals that are making billions of dollars. So has the web been weaved to where we can't break it? Can we really go back to such the simple ideas? I think this is a little more complicated.
We can go back, but we can't go back painlessly.
We can't go back painlessly. You're right.
Yeah.
And that's the whole point. Yeah, these solutions are great. But I believe these solutions also have to be adapted to today's world. The world has changed. So, yes, we need to incorporate these solutions, but it's just not as simple and easy. And
no, it's not easy. I don't mean to say that it's going to be easy.
Are the people truly willing?
No, they're not, because it means they're going to be there's going to be a moment of discomfort and even pain if we make these changes. And people don't want that. They want to blame. If anything bad happens, they're going to blame the congressman. They're going to blame the senator. They're going to blame the president. And they may be right about that to some degree, but we have to also be prepared to blame ourselves. We've made bad choices. We've elected people who were treasonous whores. And they might have smiled nice and looked like they came from central casting, but they have betrayed us persistently. And that's true of the Democratic Party, and it's true of the Republican Party. And we have to get over that, recognize our own responsibility, and accept the fact that if you want to save this country, there's a price to be paid. And if you don't want to pay it, then go tell your kids, sorry, kids, I just peed your future away. Because I don't want any trouble for me, and you kids can have it all. You'll take all the trouble. I just want to live the good life.
The price is going to be paid whether anybody wants it, accepts it, or acknowledges it. The price is going to be paid because of the system that they've created 100 years ago and how they've managed our funds beginning in 1913. I mean, this is a process, and it isn't something that has happened overnight.
That's right.
It's been a long time coming. This is going to fail. The system is going to fail. And unless the people out there protect themselves, they're the ones that will be out there gnashing their teeth because they have lost so much of what they worked hard for. We are put in a position that so few can take care. And, you know, I was talking to someone not too long ago. We talk about our children and having a future for our children. And, I mean, when did that actually, did 100 years ago, did people really work in order to have a better future for their children? That has really come along just in modern, you know, in the last, 50 years, and I could be wrong, I might be, but I mean, so it's really not about our...
Well, it's been the American dream from the beginning of this country, my understanding, going back into the late 1700s, early 1800s, the American dream, the dream, was that each succeeding generation lived better than the previous generation.
Really?
Yeah. That was the American dream. Each generation would live better than the previous generation, which means whether we're talking about our kids or not, we're still talking about the next generation. And it held up until through the early 1970s.
I thought the American dream was our freedoms and our liberties and our rights.
The American dream was that it may be that there are a multitude. There may be more than one. But my understanding is that the American dream, as envisioned by the generation of the founders and on, is that
and it, I thought it was the
generation would live better than the previous generation.
And I thought it was really the freedom of religion. I mean, that's why people came to this
country. That's why they came over here, but that wasn't the American dream per se. But, a lot of people would look at it and they have different explanations. But my understanding is that historically that was the at least consensus. That was the dream du jour back there in the days of Thomas Jefferson and John Washington and so on, or George Washington. Now, the dream du jour. Next generation would live better than this generation, the one after that better. And that was a good dream. That was a good dream. Because living better doesn't just mean living better economically, although that was the primary interest. It also means living better in terms of rights and freedoms and so on like that. And it hasn't happened. That dream has stagnated since the 1970s, and now it seems to be going in reverse. We're becoming less free, less prosperous, and where
we can't have one without the other. You can't have the American dream without the. You can't have the American dream without your rights and your liberties, and vice versa.
I agree. And where do they go? We talk about the military fighting for our freedoms. Name two. Name two freedoms that any modern American soldier has fought for. And the answer is there are none. They haven't fought for any of our freedoms. Nobody's fought for our freedom in Iraq or Afghanistan. Afghanistan didn't threaten my freedoms. Iraq didn't threaten my freedoms. The only people that are threatening my freedoms are the people in Washington, D.C. and in the state capitol here in Austin.
It's not even them, Al. It's a whole lot bigger picture.
My immediate threat comes from my government.
No.
It's not from some foreign people. If the military wants to fight for our freedoms, they ought to pay attention to what's going on in Washington, D.C.
I think the picture is much, much bigger. But you know what you do? I just had a different thought go through my mind when we were talking about the monetary policy and so forth. We don't even know if he's still on the line with us.
Well, we would know. I can tell. I don't have my aluminum hat, my tinfoil hat. Don't have it on, and therefore I can pick up these psychic vibrations.
That's what I'll get you for Christmas, a roll of Reynolds wrap.
Just give me a roll of Reynolds wrap, right? That's exactly right. Get the gold foil though instead of the aluminum foil.
Non-stick.
I get better reception with the gold foil rather than the aluminum foil. So we are down to the last 30 seconds. Any final comments, Melody?
No, it's
we're facing serious problems, and the problems won't be overcome by the people of this nation until we all agree what the problems are. And until we reach that agreement, there's going to be a difficult time. Those of you who understand and agree with that argument, you need to prepare to weather that difficult time. Some people might not survive. If you want to survive, you got to do what you can in order to protect yourself through that difficult period. I'm Alfred Adusk. I'm here with Melody Cederstrom on Financial Survival. We'll be back tomorrow. In the meantime, with the good Lord, bless you, me, Melody, and Frank, the producer. Bye-bye.
I work all day to pay the bills I have to pay. Ain't it sad? Still, there never seems to be a single penny left for me.